Good morning. This is KBOO FM 90.7 on your FM dial. If you're listening in Portland, 91.9 in Hood River, 100.7 in Corvallis. Today is Monday, August 22nd, and if you are listening via the web, either live or through a podcast, it is kboo.fm. My name is Cecil Prescott. This is More Talk Radio, and today is August 22nd, 2011. We thank you for joining us today. We welcome you, and we will have a conversation with a Oregonian who is a state legislator. Joining us in a couple of seconds is Chip Shields, who is state senator from the 22nd District in Oregon. We will have a discussion with Mr. Shields about his work in the legislature and his inquire him about his perspective about what are some of the issues that the legislature has faced this past session, also looking at the February session, what things are upcoming. And hopefully we'll have an opportunity for you to share your questions or comment with Senator Chip Shields. Let me give you a number so that you may call in a few minutes, not right now. That number is 503-231-8187. Let me caution you, we might have some problems with our phone systems at this moment, and so we apologize ahead of time if there are some difficulties in our program this morning. Hopefully, as our very great engineer is working through the kinks, we'll be able to have a flawless, seamless conversation this morning. You may know that the legislature ended its session, I believe, on time in June, this February will be the first time that the legislature will meet in February. Up until this year, the legislature met every 2 years. Recently, in its wisdom, decided to have a short session in February. I'm going to try to see if we can get through to Senator Shields. And Senator Shields, are you there? Good morning. We're having a few. Good morning, Senator Shields. Are you there? Okay. Okay, we're still working on it. I believe we can hear him, but he cannot hear us. So we apologize for the technical difficulties. We encourage you to stay tuned to reflect on some of the issues that we might want to address to Senator Shields this morning. Mr. Shields sits on the Joint Ways and Means Committee for the state legislature, and as you know, we not only have budget problems in the United States, but also here in Oregon. I'm hoping that in our conversation with Mr. Shields this morning, he may inform us about the process in the Oregon legislature and what is his perspective on things that need to be changed, things that are working well. Well, let me ask you, as you reflect on this day and the state legislature, what are some of the issues that are important to you? I think many of us who are working with our government, it's often confused about which levels of government, which level is responsible for what duties, whether it is the city or the county or the state legislature. Maybe you should call your congressional representatives. What do you do when you have potholes? What do you do when you have concerns about the schools? Certainly, all of these are separate entities with different responsibilities. And oftentimes, those who are ordinary citizens are left with the challenge of trying to see how to get their voice heard and who is able to assist them as they try to make sense. Part of what we are able to do here in Oregon is to have the opportunity to speak with our elected representatives. I think one of the things that we are fortunate here in this state is the closeness that we have and the availability that we have to actually access those who are responsible for the working in government, whether it is a city council person, whether it is a county commissioner or a state legislator, or even a congressional representative or U.S. senator. We often have the ability to not only pick up the phone, but perhaps to go into the office and speak with those who are our elected representatives. During this last month, when the U.S. Congressional representatives were on their summer break, throughout the region and throughout the states, U.S. representatives held town hall meetings, which gave us the opportunity to speak to them. Similarly, our state representatives very frequently hold town hall meetings in various places throughout the community during various days, giving us the opportunity to share and talk with our legislators. We have the ability, whether it's in a coffee shop, to walk up to them, share with them our opinion, and try to work things out and share with them what our concerns are. Do you have any problems in accessing your state or elected representative, whether it's state or local or city or national representative? How often do you pick up the phone and actually leave them a message? There was a time when we were told that the best way to communicate with our representatives was through either phone or writing a letter. Many people today find electronic communication easier, but perhaps a question we can ask when we are able to get Senator Shields with us is, what is the best form of communication? Is it possible to communicate with them and to get a response to a particular issue or concern? What has been your experience? Personally, oftentimes when I write letters, I wonder whether or not they will see them and whether or not it is whether one should write an email communication or a hard copy of a letter, and also whether or not they tally the phone calls. Many of you are have the opportunity to be activists. I would say that, you know, desk-bound activists by reading an email and clicking on something that's saying, if you are concerned about this issue, we will click on this point and your message will be delivered to the party who should get the message, whether it is a corporation, whether it is a representative of an elected representative, whether it is an employee of a state agency, or what are the best ways to communicate? Hello, good morning.
Oh, I think we're working.
Oh, my gosh. Chip, Senator Shields, how are you?
I'm very good.
Well, thank you for your patience. I'm not sure what went on or for the last 20 minutes or so, but how are you doing these days?
I'm doing fine. Pleased that the legislative session is over just for family reasons, and glad to be back in North and Northeast Portland meeting with constituents and helping them with their concerns and issues with state government.
Let me remind our listeners that we are speaking with Senator Chip Shields, who is the state senator from District 22 in Portland. This session ended in June. Did it end on time?
Yes. For the last three sessions, the legislature set a deadline to complete its work by June 30th and has met those deadlines each time. This year was helped, excuse me, I do have a bit of a cough, it was helped in part by the measure that voters passed, which allowed us to have annual sessions, and part of the annual session package was that we would have to adjourn by June 30th each year or have a supermajority vote to continue.
Mm-hmm. And so in February, that's the next session, and help me, it's a shorter session, is that correct?
I'm sorry, say again.
The next session begins in February, and it's a short session, is that correct?
Yes, just for 1 month.
Okay, and what will be the focus on in the February sessions?
What I see the big issue for the February session will be us dealing with budget issues. Unfortunately, I don't think the economy is getting any better. And we passed our budgets based on the notion that this Medicaid transformation bill that we passed is going to save us over $200 million. And I don't anticipate that amount of savings will be fully realized. So that'll be, I think, the biggest issue that the state will be dealing with. I also chair a government a committee called the General Government Consumer and Small Business Protection Committee, and one of the key issues that we'll be looking at is what to do about the kind of the massive fraud that is happening in our foreclosure system as related to an outfit called MERS, the Mortgage Electronic Recording System. And there have been huge problems with banks fraudulently robo-signing documents and a lot of banks going to foreclosure without actually having the right to foreclose on a particular property because they haven't established a chain of title. So we're going to be looking at foreclosure issues heavily in February, as well as bringing health insurance costs down for small business.
Well, that sounds like a lot to do in a short period of time.
Yes, it pretty much anything that is going to pass in that session has to have all the legwork completed beforehand.
Now, you've been a state legislator for a number of years, first as a member of the House of Representatives. And how long have you served in the Senate?
In the Senate, this was my first full term. I served in the special session previously, but my first full term.
Mm-hmm. Could you share with us a little bit in terms of your view? Is there a difference working as a member of the House as opposed to working in the Senate? What are some of the similarities and differences you discovered?
Yeah, I think as some of your listeners may know, but a lot may not know, there are 30 Senate members in the Oregon Senate and 60 House members in the Oregon House. And for every Senate district, there are two House districts. So my Senate district, Senate District 22, which encompasses the bulk of North and Northeast Portland, the portion of the district mostly on the west side of I-5 is represented by Representative Tina Kotek, and on the east side by Representative Lou Frederick. Representative Kotek also represents some of the Cully neighborhood and out towards the airport in the northern portion. But I think that one of the things that I wanted to do this time around is take the long view, because we had a 30-30 split in the Oregon House and a razor-thin margin in the Oregon Senate. I knew that to get things done over the long term, I would need to develop relationships with the new members of the House, as well as my new colleagues in the Senate. So I think one of the main differences between the House and the Senate is just, frankly, that you need half as many people to vote with you in order to pass a bill. And I tried to use that to North and Northeast Portland's advantage to try to pass as many things through as we could, or at least call some significant attention to issues to lay the groundwork for future. And then try to develop relationships in the House. I met with every single House member except one during the course of the session, you know, for to find out what was important to them and see if we could find some common ground.
It seems like it's so important. You mentioned the split in the Senate and how close it closely divided the Senate and the House are, and perhaps and you shared how you met with many many of your colleagues. Is the atmosphere there as toxic as we sense it is in Washington? Are you able to work across lines?
Yeah, you know, what people don't really realize is that in Salem, I'd say 85% of all the bills that we pass are almost unanimously passed in both chambers. And then, so it's a pretty small percentage where there are, where we're really duking it out with brass knuckle politics. One thing, an example that I would like to call to your listeners' attention, where I was able to reach across the aisle to one of the more conservative members and find some common ground, was on making health insurance companies justify their premium increases. Mm-hmm. I worked with a really sharp Republican, Representative Mike McClain, to hold the insurance division's feet to the fire and make sure that they were doing a good enough job in making health insurance companies justify their premium increases. We received a lot of testimony where in the past these things were kind of done, the approval of premium increases were done behind closed doors, mm-hmm. And we found that the more open and public the process was, the lower health insurance premiums were. So Representative Mike McClain used to live in Northeast Portland. Was practiced at a downtown law firm for years and really was an exceptional wingman in bringing these issues forward. And while at the end of the day, the insurance companies, the 18 lobbyists that they employ, were able to kill the bill, we did amp up enough visibility and pressure on the insurance division and health insurance companies that I do want to give some applause to the insurance mm-hmm. division. They're now going forward and saying, we're going to do all of this, all of the health insurance premium increase reviews out in the open instead of behind closed doors. So I think that's an advance. It wouldn't have happened if I didn't have a really tough, smart Republican on my side to do it.
Excellent, excellent. And, you know, one thing I'm thinking as you share that of working across lines, you know, recently the Oregon, remember Senator Hatfield, who for many, many Oregonians is a model of what a good legislator is and his ability to work across lines. And it sounds as if at least many people in the Oregon legislature are seeking to find common grounds. Let me remind our listeners that you are listening to KBOO. We are speaking with Senator Chip Shields, Representative State Senator from District 22 in Portland. Our numbers here are 503-231-8187. We invite you to give a call if you have a question. This is a great opportunity to talk to your elected representative. We'll go to Joanne. Good morning. Thank you for waiting.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Yeah, hello. Thanks for the program, Mr. Shields. I thank you and anybody else in the state that's working for people like my daughter, and her children and me. We're low income, disabled, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And we're really alone in the world. And, you know, one of my big concerns, even with, you know, all these big things from the federal government that are affecting states and that, another one in Oregon for me has been all these people. It seems to me for the past 10 years or more, there have been a lot of people coming to the state, retiring, or have good incomes, support and good jobs, and maybe even some millionaires that are coming here. And my concern is that I get the impression that the concerns of these people are more important in this state state, with the people that run the state and that, then they are with people like my daughter and her children and that. And I know maybe you won't understand where I'm coming from, but I'll put this out there. And you do what you want. Thank you.
Well, your point's well taken. In politics, there are essentially two currencies. There's people power and there's money power. And the health insurance companies have been able to mobilize the money power end of it. But I think that recognizing that there are times when people power wins, it takes a heck of a lot of effort, more than it should, but it does work. And I wanted to also suggest to your listeners that to get very much involved in the political process, not only coming down to Salem. I think they'll find their own state representatives and state senators very accessible, but additionally that they should get involved before the legislature's in session with various campaigns. And now is a very good time to call up your state senator or state representative and ask to meet them for a cup of coffee, tell them what issues you're interested in, and find somebody that you, if you agree with them, to volunteer on their campaign, because there's something magical about somebody who's willing to knock on doors for you. You never forget it. I'll come out of a meeting with the governor to meet with any of my volunteers who've been, who were knocking on doors for me and constituents as well. So, there are a number of candidates out there that are going to have a tough battle this time around. For example, Senator Lori Moniz Anderson did some great work in the Health Committee. She was critical in passing a cultural competency bill, Senate Bill 97. Mm-hmm. She was critical in passing Senate Bill 868, which was an equal pay for equal work bill for nurse practitioners. And Senator Lori Moniz Anderson is really going to need some help, because the corporate interests are really going to be going after her. Because if they can take her out, then the Oregon Senate will be dead even, and nothing progressive will ever pass through the Oregon Senate. So I would encourage people to look up on the website, on the web, the addresses of people like Lori Moniz Anderson or your other representatives. And I'm not particularly concerned if you're a Republican or a Democrat, but the more people who get involved in the political side of this, the more will have the ability to actually win over the moneyed interest that Joanne was referring to. Also, of course, the root of that is campaign finance reform, and I've been a co-sponsor of several campaign finance reform bills over the last couple of years. There's been real difficulty in getting traction on those, though, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm. We're speaking with Senator Chip Shields, state senator from District 22. Our numbers here are 503-231-8187. You mentioned we're encouraging people to be a part of a political campaign, to get and talk with representatives, to let them know how they feel. Senator, how did you become interested in politics? Were you interested as a kid? Did you just were you class president, or was it something, a motivating issue that prompted you early on?
Yeah, thanks, Cecil, for that question. No, I never thought that I would run for office. I was the executive director, the founding executive director of an outfit in Northeast Portland called Better People, B-E-T-T-E-R, betterpeople.org is their website, betterpeople.org. And it was a living wage employment and counseling program for people who are in recovery from addiction, people who've been in trouble with the law. And I always felt that as an executive director, I had an obligation not only to help the, you know, 200 or 300 people who came before our organization, but to also put, whatever time I could into changing the policy that got these people in this situation to begin with. So I started working on against ballot measures that imposed mandatory sentencing. I started working on a ballot measure that would replace the death penalty in Oregon with mandatory life imprisonment instead. And excuse me, both of those did not succeed. So when my state representative decided that she was going to step down, that was Deborah Kapori, I decided to throw my hat in the ring and was elected.
Wow. Were there people urging you to saying, Chip, you know, we know you're really good in this organization. You're a good advocate. Perhaps you should consider running. Were you personally, did you jump into that campaign?
No, nobody actually approached me. I just, when I heard the rumblings that Representative Gaffori, who's now County Commissioner in Multnomah County, was going to step out, I just knew that there wasn't anybody in the legislature at that point who had expertise on making the criminal justice system fairer and more effective. So I just jumped in and started swimming and just wanted to see if somebody was going to, you know, mm-hmm. come knock me out of the race or not. And I think because I'd been doing that work so long in the community, that certainly was a huge asset.
Certainly, certainly. We're speaking with Senator Chip Shields. Our number here of 503-231-8187. Give us a call if you have a question or a comment for Senator Shields, and we'll go to Mike. Good morning.
Yeah, good morning. I got a question for the legislator. I'm not quite sure who has the most power over the Portland police, you guys or the police union. It seems to me that that the legislature sets a low threshold for policemen to justify shooting people, and then after they shoot people, they automatically get a vacation that they call paid leave. And so I would like to see that you guys raise the bar a little bit on the police department when it comes to saying I was fearful for my life, and it seemed to be the only justification they need for shooting people and getting away with it. Thank you.
Yeah, Mike, your point's well taken. We had a bill in 2007, SB 111, that would put some more teeth into the process of holding police officers accountable in deadly use of force incidents when deadly use of force was not justified. Unfortunately, to get that bill all the way through, it had to be watered down quite a bit because there was strong opposition from the Police Officers Association at the state level. And Representative Lou Frederick reintroduced some bills that I had introduced back in the 2005 session, and with the House split 30-30, Republicans to Democrats, there was just no way to get it through. The other thing is that one of the reasons why Senate Bill 111 had some trouble is that I didn't have a whole lot of people coming down to the legislature to counterbalance the power of the Police Officers Association. So that goes back to what I was talking about earlier, which is the importance of people power. Down in the legislature, one or two Portland legislators can't get a bill like that through by themselves. There's got to be a wave of people coming down to testify to their own legislators. And so, Mike, I would encourage you to get involved with your own state representative or state senator. You can find out who they are on the web, or you want to call my office, we can help you figure that out, too, 503-231-2564. I may well be your state senator, I'm not sure. But your point's well taken. We can pass bills about police accountability, but often these are largely City of Portland issues. The policy around you know, whether or not somebody has administrative leave is a City of Portland issue. The state, the primary intersection we have with the police is that we fund the Department of Public Safety Standards and Training, which is the training agency for police throughout the state.
Thank you, Mike, for your call. Let me remind you that we're speaking with Senator Shields, District 22. Our numbers here are 503-231-8187. You mentioned, again, the importance of people going down and speaking with their representatives and state senators. For those who find that they're unable to do that to make the trip down to Salem when you're in session, you mentioned that right now you haven't the opportunity to meet your constituency in community meetings. What are some of the concerns that people are raising? I assume certainly the economy and jobs. Are there other things that people are pointing out that they're speaking to you about?
You know, when I knock on doors and when I hear from constituents, I mean, the top concern, without question, is the massive unemployment that we're experiencing in North and Northeast Portland, and how many people are out of work and how many people are losing their houses. It's, I think that is the key issue of our time. And I think what people are experiencing is the fact that, you know, over the last 10 years, we've been living on real estate finance and housing bubble. And when that bubble exploded, we realized that we've offshored all of our good jobs to other countries, manufacturing jobs particularly. That's why I introduced a resolution, it's called Senate Memorial 1, and actually got some Republican support on it, that would send a message to Congress that we need to pass the Trade Act, which essentially is a fair trade act in front of Congress right now that would equalize the treatment that workers receive in other countries, including environmental and labor standards for other countries, in order for us to give them preferential trade treatment. Because I think the offshoring of jobs is the key issue and the main reason why so many people are unemployed and why our economy is not going to get started again.
We're speaking with Senator Shields. Our numbers are 503-231-8187. You may have a concern or a question. This is a great opportunity. Tim, thank you for calling. Good morning, Tim.
Yes, good morning.
Yes, you're on the air.
Yes, Senator, I have a question about our wind turbines, and they're being shut off when there's excess water to spill over the dam to protect the salmon. Do you know anything about any legislation that was put in place or something that was enacted to halt the operation of the wind turbine? It seems kind of a shame that those, you know, all the investment had gone into that only to see something like this happen.
Well, I do know that that the utility companies have argued that there are big problems in the capacity of the existing transmission lines, and that they've had to shut off some wind turbines in order to just simply use all the hydropower that is existing. You know, in the legislature, we get kind of compartmentalized. So I've got a staff of 1.5 that track 3,000 bills. And so really we focus a lot, probably 80% of our attention on our own committee. And that was not an issue that was under the purview of my committee. So I don't know if I could tell you much more about that. But my office number is 503-231-2564. And I'm easy to find on the web. If you want my staff to help bird dog that for you, we'd be happy to.
Well, you just mentioned something that kind of clicked for me too, was the fact that the infrastructure of the power lines is 60 years old or better, and it seems like maybe that would be a key project for Oregon to step up on and up these power lines before we end up having a big blackout.
Yeah, your point's well taken. There was a bill that would make it easier for those kinds of projects to go forward, and I did vote for that one.
Thank you very kindly. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Tim.
Thank you, Tim, for calling. Our numbers here are 503-231-8187. Give us a call if you have a question or comment for Senator Shields. You mentioned that you have a really small staff. I think you said 1.5, tracking 3,000 bills. How is it possible to be effective with such a small staff and such a large, large thing, many things on your plate?
Yeah, no, that's a good question, and it's one of my primary frustrations is the lack of staff that we have to compete with the very powerful interests that are down in Salem. So you, I mean, the way you deal with those kinds of institutional constraints is you just, you have to look to people you trust on particular issues. So, for example, on environmental issues, I frequently look to Senator Jackie Dingfelder, who is a water expert and really is an expert on a variety of environmental issues, particularly those relating to water and salmon. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, in the House Healthcare Committee, I look a lot to Representative Mitch Greenlick on healthcare issues. So you just gotta find people you trust and have some faith that the committee chairs have done their work. On the other hand, you give special attention to bills that come out of committees where you don't see eye to eye with the committee chair. And in 2005, I voted no on enormous amount of bills, and you just try to hire the best staff you can and do the best you can. But that, if there was one way that I could improve the legislature, it would be to give me a staff similar to what they have at Portland City Council, where they've got, you know, a public safety expert, an arts expert, a, you know, human services expert, and just have those kind, that kind of continuity session to session.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned, we mentioned before in terms of the move to have the longer session and then the shorter session. Is, would it be advisable to move to annual sessions that last a significant point of time and have full-time legislators?
I think I would. I mean, I understand the argument for it. My concern is that if you are the average resident of Oregon and you're trying to keep an eye on what the legislature's up to, mm-hmm. it, when the legislature's in session, it's almost like a part-time job, just trying to see where particular bills are and how they're progressing and try to engage and stop bad bills from happening. Mm. So I think this strikes the right balance,
okay.
although I was hesitant about it, with, you know, 1 month. And that way, I think it'll make it easier for residents to take a deep breath, say, okay, the legislature's not going to be in session for a while. I can go back to, you know, making a living and make sure that, the rest of my life is intact without worrying about it. We're going to screw something up down in Salem.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We're speaking with Senator Shields. Our number here is 503-231-8187. You mentioned a couple of very important points. You talk about the work around health insurance and foreclosure. Are there any things that's coming up that we should be focusing on those two issues? Particularly, you mentioned, I want to first talk about foreclosures and the mortgage industry. You mentioned that exciting thing that you're doing.
Yes, excuse me again for my cough. Yeah, the one of the key issues we're going to have to address, or perhaps not address because the courts may address it well enough for us, is what to do about the massive fraud that is happening even today in the foreclosure system, and namely surrounding the MERS system, M-E-R-S. Mm-hmm. And that is the mortgage electronic recording system that the banks put in place so that they wouldn't have to go down to the courthouse every time that they wanted to, you know, sell a loan up to somebody else or foreclose. Well, what they're finding is that a lot of these documents have been fraudulently signed or robo-signed, mm-hmm. or robo-stamped by these robo-signing factories, and that when they get into court, they're finding that the bank that's trying to foreclose actually has no right to foreclose. So I'm coming to the conclusion that Oregon may need to become a judicial foreclosure state so that the courts could be the ones to iron out these kinds of details.
Mm-hmm.
So the MERS issue will be front and center. We're going to continue to bird dog making health insurance companies justify their premium increases. And that has been a big topic in my committee, making health insurance companies justify their premium increases out in the open rather than behind closed doors, which is the way that regulation has taken place in the past. And then another issue is that insurance is the only line of business, the only line of business that is exempt from the state's Unfair Trade Practices Act.
Hmm.
And that's a loophole that they've enjoyed for a very long time, and in part mostly because Republicans have been in charge of the Oregon legislature for a very long time. And it just doesn't make any sense that if any business engages in fraudulent dealings, you can go after them under the Unfair Trade Practices Act. The Attorney General can. You have a private right of action in the courts, but if you are an insurance company, you're exempt from that, and that doesn't make sense to me. And we're going to try to change it, if not in February, after the next legislative session, once hopefully we get a few more Democrats elected.
Now, why is that the case? Why are they exempt? What's the argument for them to be exempt?
Well, it's pretty thin, but their argument is that we're already regulated by this state agency called the Department of Consumer and Business Services, and it would just be too confusing to have this additional regulatory mechanism of being subject to the Unfair Trade Practices Act. But, you know, it's not a legitimate argument in my point of view. I mean, there are the realtors. Every realtor in Portland is regulated by the the real estate board at the state.
Sure.
But they're also subject to the Unfair Trade Practices Act. Every doctor is regulated by the medical examiner's board, but they're also subject to the Unfair Trade Practices Act. So it's pretty thin, and basically they were able to kill the bill with their political might and all the 18-plus lobbyists that they employed out at the legislature.
Well, that raises another issue for me in terms of, you have a small staff, part-time legislator, people have their lives, you have to get your job done. It seems like most citizens aren't able to stay on top of what's happening. So if you a lobbyist, where you're on top of these things and can influence legislation, it seems as if it's uneven for the average person to challenge the power of those powerful interests.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I remember my freshman year looking out into the sea of lobbyists in the Business, Labor, and Consumer Affairs Committee when I was a Democrat in the minority. I look out in the sea of lobbyists and I said, oh gosh, now who's here representing the public interest? And then I thought to myself, oh yeah, that's us, the Democratic Party. And in its best moments, the Democratic Party is that party that looks out for the little guy in the best sense of the word and the best, non-gendered sense of that word. But, we need help down there, and you can't fight the world alone. That's why we join together in churches. That's why we join together in unions. That's why we join together in association. So, just about every issue has some group formally organized to lobby that, even if you only have a couple of minutes in a week that you can devote to that because of your kids, because of, you're working two or three jobs, because your job was offshore to Indochina, you can find a group that you can join with, and you can do just a little bit, and all of that collectively can get channeled in a way where the people can actually win. Not all the time. It's an uphill battle. The money and interest, frankly, have us outgunned, but it is possible to win.
Yes, it is. Let me remind our listeners that we're speaking with Senator Shields. I think we have time for one more call. But before we go to that call, if you don't speak to the senator, you can call his office, 503-231-2564, and get a lot of information there. Let's go to LJ. Good morning, LJ.
Good morning. How are you, Cecil?
I'm well. Thank you.
Hi, Senator Shields. How are you? I admire your work greatly. I don't know whether this has been covered or not, but the only state in the union that doesn't seem to be underwater at this moment is North Dakota. And one of the reasons is there's a state banking system in North Dakota, and I'm wondering if we can talk about that, starting a state bank here in Oregon, making sure that the profits from the bank gets channeled back into the state, and I'll take my answer off the air, and thank you very, very much for your work.
Thanks, LJ. Yes, I'm glad you brought that up. I hadn't had a chance to address that as one of the issues that we need to be taking up in the February session or beyond. But my committee introduced Senate Bill 889, and there was a companion bill, House Bill 3452, the state bank bill, and it passed out of my committee and unfortunately got caught up and died in the last couple of days of the session. I think the main reason that bill did not move forward is because the House Republicans would not allow it to. Mm-hmm. And I think we would have had the votes on the floor, but their leadership just was not interested in the idea. So the Working Families Party did a great job of pushing that forward. If you're interested in pursuing a state bank, I would suggest you look up the Working Families Party of Oregon, of which I've been their nominee in the legislature, and I'm proud to work closely with them, and they'll need all the help they can get to make this work. I would also encourage particularly those of you who live outside the immediate Portland area to call your state senator and representative and get involved in the upcoming campaigns. As I mentioned again, Senator Lori Moniz Anderson has a big bullseye on her back by the corporate interests, and she did a very good job pushing through some very good bills this session that wouldn't have gone anywhere without her. She's in East Multnomah County, and I would just encourage people to understand that lobbying begins before November, not after, and to get involved in the political campaigns of whoever they support, Republican or Democrat.
Hey, thank you so much, Senator Shield, and thank you for your patience as we worked out the kinks. Let me remind you that his office number is 503-231-2564, and thank you for joining us this morning, Senator Shields.
Thanks for having me, Cecil. It was a pleasure.
Oh, great. You've been listening to More Talk Radio. Stay tuned for more programming here on your community radio station, KBOO-FM.